Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Keterum Tolling and First to File Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 13, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Kellogg Brown and Root Services v. United States ex rel. Carter. This case involves two questions. The first question is whether the statute of limitations for a claim of civil fraud against the federal government brought by a relator, which is a private individual bringing suit on behalf of the government, can be indefinitely tolled by the Wartime Suspension of Limitations Act. The second question asks whether the False Claims Act's first-to-file rule, which presents an incentive for relators to be the first to bring claims of fraud, simply requires that only one case can be pending at a time, or requires that once a case has been filed, all cases based upon the same facts and alleging the same type of fraud are barred. To discuss the case, we have Justin Walker, who is currently the executive director of the Global Game Changers Children's Education Initiative. This year, he will join the faculty at the University of Louisville as an assistant professor of law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Walker.
Today I'm going to talk about a case with some large implications for government contractors. It also has some potential implications, depending on how broadly the court rules, for how we define war as a legal matter in an era of undeclared wars. It's called Kellogg, Brown, and Root v. Carter, which was argued on January 13, 2015. At the center of the case is the False Claims Act. It prohibits people from presenting a false claim to the government for payment. It allows the government to sue for fraudulent claims, but it also allows whistleblowers to sue to collect a portion of the treble damages, and that's what happened here. Carter worked in Iraq for KBR, and he says KBR systematically overbilled the government by claiming 12-hour workdays, even when the workdays were shorter. The problem for Carter is the False Claims Act, 6-year statute of limitations. The fraud here occurred in 2005, and Carter filed his suit in 2006, so you might wonder, what's the problem? Well, Carter's case was dismissed without prejudice 3 times between 2006 and 2011. So when this suit was filed for the 4th time in 2011, it was more than 6 years after the alleged fraud. I'll call that last suit Carter 2011. Now, why was the case dismissed so many times? Well, Carter kept running into an unusual provision in the False Claims Act called the First to File provision. It says that when a whistleblower sues, no person other than the government may bring a related action based on the facts underlying the pending action. In other words, it creates a race to the courthouse. If I file my suit about overbilling in Iraq before Carter does, Carter's suit gets dismissed. So why was Carter 2011 dismissed? Because someone named Dupree had a similar case pending when Carter 2011 was filed. Now, here's where the rubber hits the road. The district court dismissed Carter 2011 with prejudice, meaning Carter can't ever refile it. It did that for 2 independent reasons. First, it said by now, the 6-year statute of limitations is up. And second, it said even aside from that, once you've been beaten to the courthouse by someone like Dupree, the first to file provision bars you from ever refiling your suit, even if Dupree's case has since been dismissed, which it has. Now, on appeal, the Fourth Circuit disagreed with both those holdings. First, over a dissent, it said Carter doesn't have to worry about the statute of limitations because the statute of limitations is suspended by the Wartime Suspension of Limitations Act. More on that in a minute. Second, the Fourth Circuit said the race to the courthouse does not bar Carter from refiling after Dupree's suit is dismissed. On both these questions, the United States government agrees with Carter, and these are the 2 questions the Supreme Court has decided to consider. So let's spend a couple of minutes on each. First, the Wartime Suspension of Limitations Act, as promised. During a war, it suspends the statute of limitations for, quote, any offense involving fraud, unquote, against the government. And it does it until 5 years after the war ends. Until then, no statute of limitations. So for Carter to win on this question, he has to prove that when the Suspension Act says any fraud offense, it includes civil actions brought by private relators. That is a tall order, although Carter has some legislative history on his side for that. A problem for Carter is that the Suspension Act is codified in the criminal code, where offense always refers to a crime. Carter and the government disagree with that interpretation of other references to offense in the criminal code, but their defense of that position at oral argument did not go particularly well. Even if KBR is wrong about offense meaning crime, it argues in the alternative that any offense doesn't encompass civil actions brought by private whistleblowers rather than the government. That's because of the thinking behind the Suspension Act is the government is too busy to investigate fraud in the middle of a war, a statutory purpose that doesn't apply to private whistleblowers. However, KBR's primary argument went so well at oral argument that it seems unlikely the court will need to address this alternative argument. I don't believe I've ever seen an attorney allowed to speak with so few interruptions for longer than KBR's attorney spoke. With the caveat that it is dangerous to make predictions from oral arguments, I think it's safe to say it would not be surprising if all nine justices reversed the Fourth Circuit and agreed with KBR on this Suspension Act question, which is dispositive in this case. The court could just stop there. One quick note on the oral argument. A recent Reuters report profiled the rise of a small group of 75 attorneys who frequently practice with great success before the Supreme Court. While KBR's attorney, John Elwood, was listed by Reuters among those 75 attorneys, Carter's attorney was not. In this case, Elwood was more familiar with the court's customs, and at times, it showed. Moving on to the first-to-file question. KBR appeals pretty strongly to the Act's purpose here, saying that the purpose of a whistleblower suit is to uncover fraud. Once an alleged fraud is uncovered in a suit like Dupree's, there's no purpose left to allowing Carter to sue, even if Dupree's suit is dismissed, because the government has already been alerted to the fraud by Dupree. As the Ninth Circuit said, a whistleblower sounds the alarm, he does not echo it. That argument went less well at oral argument. In long exchanges with KBR's counsel, Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg expressed skepticism. Justices Scalia and Breyer also seemed at least somewhat unpersuaded. In fact, it was not clear from the argument that any justice seemed clearly persuaded by KBR on this point, although it is worth repeating the caveat that it's dangerous to draw conclusions from the questions justices ask or don't ask at oral argument. So, to double up on Lieutenant Colombo's line here, I have just two more things. First, a word on why all this matters. KBR, other defense contractors, and the Chamber of Commerce as amici say the Fourth Circuit's decision is something of a disaster because it will incentivize private relators like Carter to delay filing their suits in order to increase their damages claim. This leads to longer periods of fraud, which is bad for the government. It also leads to increased costs to honest contractors because larger claims mean more pressure to settle unmeritorious suits. And there's some reason to believe many of these cases are unmeritorious. 75% of whistleblower suits do not get intervention from the government, and 90% of those suits are eventually dismissed. Second and finally, one quick note on the Suspension Act. It's kind of like a modern war, easy to start, hard to end. Under it, the statute of limitations is suspended until the President or Congress formally declares a war over. That, of course, might never happen, which means if Carter and the Solicitor General were to win, which seems unlikely, it could mean the de facto end of any statute of limitations for the False Claims Act, at least for a very, very long time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.